Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 276 of the Board Game Barbecue Podcast, brought to you by Advent Games and our patrons. You have Connor in one of the hosting chairs this afternoon slash this evening, or whenever you're listening to our great podcast. And joining me are, look, as far as Sydney Ciders go, they're two of the better ones, I will admit. The first one is the Charles Barkley to my Hakeem Olajuwon. Mitch, how you going there?
I'm doing well, Condor. I'm happy with that intro. That's probably one of the better ones I've had.
Normally, it's like, I didn't want to call you Muggsy Bogues because I don't think that's very fair. But and funnily enough, we're joined by another basketball aficionado. What do you reckon? Is this person not, like, if we're going with NBA players, the Gary Payton of the group in?
Yeah.
Lauren, how you going, Lauren? The glove.
Yeah, good, mate. How's it going?
Now, good, really good, really good. Stoked to have you guys back joining me. We've had a little bit of time off.
Yeah.
We had it's been good. I hope we've had some gaming, not getting in the way of things, but I hope we've been able to find some time for gaming. I certainly got a bit of gaming done over the Christmas break. Lauren, what's been going on in your neck of the woods? Have you done anything cool? Have you played anything interesting? What's been happening with you?
Well, it was a bit miserable and rainy in Sydney, as much as we love to brag that our weather is better than Melbourne. But I did manage to eke in a whole lot of gaming, which is great. I got to play a lot of kind of venerable classics with the family because you know how it is, holiday season. Everyone's home. Everyone's on annual leave. What are you going to do to fill the 6 hours with family? You're going to play games.
Yep.
We played Wits and Wagers. Have either of you played Wits and Wagers before?
I have. I've played it. It's great. It's good fun.
No, I haven't. But it's like a trivia game where you bet money on, or you bet points or something on who's going to have the right answer or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly right. It's a trivia game where all the answers are numeric. And once everyone's popped their answer to the question, you just line them up in a row from lowest to highest, and everyone bets who they think has the right answer. So you get a little bonus for getting the right answer, but it's mostly just who do you think knows how many steps are up to the Eiffel Tower, or how many points Michael Jordan made in his career, right? Very American questions, but the best part of it is just either when everyone backs one person, because like, yeah, this person definitely knows it, and everyone just loses their money, which was great. And then also just when people have stupid answers, like, what do you mean you think the White House only has 10 rooms? Which is like 150-something, by the way. It's like a crazy amount. But yeah, so that has just been a riot with the fam. Also playing classics like Just One, Codenames, which always hit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been, really, really good.
Yeah.
Also got a chance to play Bullet Heart.
Now, I have not played this, but I think I would love it. So please tell me more.
Yeah. Heard of this one, Mitch?
I actually have had it for a little while and I don't have it anymore.
Oh, wow. Well, it's frantic fun. It's a real-time puzzle where basically you're going to be drawing chips out of a bag and placing them down kind of Space Invader style. And if they hit the bottom of your board, they're going to cause damage to you. And then you have these different cards that you can trigger off in different patterns. So if I have a red 3 below a red 1, then all of the chips to the right of it or whatever I can tick off. So there's a little bit of push your luck, kind of frantically drawing things from a bag to fill up your board. And trying to pile them off your board, because anything you can pile off your board is going to go into your opponent's bag. And the round will end when you clear your bag or when you just decide to stop. But once one person decides to stop, everyone's going to pull all the chits from your bag and they're going to fill up these different colored rows and you just get absolutely hammered. And I played with Kenny and I don't know how this bloke is so good at this game, but it was just these mounds of like chits that I had to pull out at the end of rounds. But it was, yeah, really frantic, really good fun. It definitely worth a try if you've not ever played a real-time game because it's quite simple.
Yeah, and it kind of makes sense when I saw pictures of it, and they said it was real time, because it is that like den of Space Invaders, like slowly coming down. And if it was like, okay, I'll have a turn, then you have a turn, it wouldn't be as tense. It kind of just be like, oh, okay, I've got time to think about my move or whatever. Like, is it? Do you find that with it as well? Like, if it was turn-based, it kind of wouldn't have the appeal that it does?
Yeah, I definitely think that you need a bit of the frantic, stressed energy in it. It wasn't as stressful and fast-paced as, say, something like Jetpack Joyride, which is really fun and really silly, and you're literally just trying to race to the end in this, like, helicopter platformer-style game. This you can kind of pause and take your time a little, but there's a little bit of kind of a game of chicken, because if your opponent ramps up the speed, then you've got to ramp up the speed and kind of do moves that maybe aren't as clever, aren't as efficient. But yeah, it was just a neat little real-time puzzle, which was very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. It does get very high reviews, which is why I actually got it in the first place. But I only played it solo, so maybe I sort of missed that pressure aspect coming from another player.
Yeah, I definitely think you need someone else to bounce off of, because I think the solo system, what I liked most was just seeing Kenny clear the chits off the board. It's like, shoot, those are coming in my bag. I'm just frantically trying to muster up something. Yeah. So that was it. Yeah, that was really, really cool.
Cool.
Nice one. What about you, Mitty? What's been going on in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, look, I enjoyed myself over the break, so didn't really play any games. No, I'm just kidding. No, I just get this kidding. I always find obviously it's obvious that Christmas and New Year and, you know, the time is a great time to play games, because you've got people coming around and people visiting and usually catching with family and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I did what everyone would expect to anyone else in the hobby to do, and I did exactly that. I've played a lot of games with my kids and with family. We've played, I'm going to run through a few because I've got loads of stuff to cover off, and if I talk in detail about everything, we'll be here till February. But yeah, so we, like, the kids have played Scribbly Gum, we played Dixit, Sushi Get Party. The kids really enjoying Nana as well, which is a great one.
Classic.
One thing I did want to raise that I played My Little Scythe with my daughter Layla, and we actually started painting the My Little Scythe minis a long, long time ago when I sort of first got the game, not long after it first came out. And so she was a lot younger then, probably under 10. And yeah, we started painting the minis, and, you know, we got along and she enjoyed it, but I'll just say the quality wasn't outstanding for what you would sort of look for. From her. Oh, and subpar for me as well. Let's be honest.
Poor Layla's just got the drive by. It's like, well, it was a bit subpar, dear.
It was good for her age level, right? You know, but it really wasn't. It didn't do a great deal of for the aesthetics of the mini. Anyway, so I'd done a couple that I sort of did at the time, and then she even said, oh, I'm not really very happy with the one that she'd done. So we stripped it back and it was sort of unpainted again. And then when we played the other day, we sort of had a bit of fun with the game. And she said, I'm gonna paint these minis again. And I was like, oh, yeah, fair enough. Get into that. Because she's been into arts and crafts and things and whatever in school. And she's done some other paintings, like actual canvas style sort of paintings and things that she's been into.
I've seen some of them. They're so good. They're awesome.
Yeah, she's quite into it. And then so she said, I'm going to sit down and have another crack at these minis. And can I tell you, oh my God, like the difference between then and now is just, and the quality that she's achieved has just blown anything away that I've ever done painting.
Yeah, nice.
So yeah, that was a bit of a moment for me, because I was like, oh my gosh, these minis she's done is phenomenal. So she's been working through the rest of them now, and even her older brother, Ethan, has felt a little bit jealous because he doesn't want to be shown up by his little sister. So he's even jumped in and started doing it, and he's doing a great job too. So yeah, it's been from that aspect, it's been kind of cool seeing them sort of look for something to do during the holidays where they're not just playing video games and talking online to their friends or whatever. So it's been kind of cool to sit down here and have them sit around the table and knock some paints out, some minis. So yeah, it's been good.
It's funny because I've gone back to painting some of my Warhammer as well for that reason too. So having a bit of time off, I found myself, you know, not setting up a board game or just jumping on and maybe playing some PlayStation or computer or things like that. And I thought, no, like let's actually do something constructive with my afternoons and then save that for the evening when I could play with my brothers. And the same thing. And I always forget. It's almost like I wish I could bottle that feeling, and Citadel could charge extra amounts for the feeling in a bottle than they charge for their paints of how good it feels when you have that mini that's painted. Like I had a couple that were halfway done with their base coats and I was like, oh, they kind of look a bit crummy. And I was just like, okay, I said, well, let's stick with the painting plan. I'll go back and paint them. And then just having the basic, so like they kind of call like army ready, where it's, you might have thrown a base coat on and then thrown a shade over the top or whatever to give it a bit of definition. It just, it is so good, and it just gives them so much life. Like I would love to play a game with anyone who has the painted minis that they've painted themselves. Like I'm trying to think, you know, Jules obviously does a lot of painting. And then like, I know I've seen some of like Adrian's with his Kingdom Death Monster stuff or whatever. And, you know, some of the Warhammer that you see on the table is just incredible. So yeah, no, it was cool that she's like, no, I'm not happy with what I've done. I'm going to go back and paint them again. Like it's nice to see a little bit of reflection. You're talking about party games. I played one that I hadn't heard before that my niece got for Christmas, and it's called 60 Second Scribble. So 60 Second Scribble. Okay. And it sounds exactly like what it sounds like. It is absolute bedlam. Absolute craziness. So what you do is there's tiers of like how difficult games are, or games, how difficult the drawings are, because what happens is that you get a theme that you have to draw, right? So you've got to draw the theme. So the theme might be things that start with M, breakfast foods or things like that. And you've got 60 seconds. And I think there's 15 different items on the card, and it's, you need to draw as many of them as you can in whatever order you want. You don't have to, and because that's what I did the first time, I was like, oh, the easy ones were down the bottom but the harder ones are at the top. So there's like easy, hard and impossible. And I'm trying to remember, I'll see if I can quickly get it up, like the one that my brother-in-law had to do. It was like the end of the world, or like, you know, natural disasters or things like that. So it's like things that start with F, or insects, or, you know, like I said, breakfast foods. And then it just gets harder and harder. So what you do, yeah, you got 60 seconds, then you pass it around. And the amount of, like, that, you've all played games like this, right? Like where it's like, oh my God, what is that supposed to be? Because then it's almost like when you used to do the spelling test in school, someone would guess, like you would have to say, okay, I think this is this, think this is this. And then you have to go back and take it and mark it. And it's like, what, where was that? Like, it's like, is it peanuts? No, it's not peanuts. It's worms. It's like, what is that? Like worms? Like little like.
And do you have that moment where they then start going, can't you see this? It's this, 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 oh, this, 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 that. You should see that. How did you not figure that out?
Come on. Yeah. So, the game's like Telestrations, where I have a friend that when we play Telestrations, he's like, nah, this is going off the rails. And he like intentionally tries to like make it not like whatever it's supposed to be. But it was a pretty good one. And one little game I wanted to touch on before we go back to Lauren to talk about a game I'm super interested in hearing about, is I got to play my little Everdell. So Everdell, I don't know if either of you two have played this edition of the game, but Everdell's still, I think, one of the greatest games ever made in terms of production and the game
itself. I haven't played that yet, but I call my little Everdell the game I bought before it turned into a behemoth.
Yeah. The first edition printing,
exactly.
Well, and it's funny you say that, because in a way it kind of strips down everything that Everdell does well into a much smaller package. So what you have is that you've still got the worker resource spots, you still have the cards that you can buy, they're still the same resources, so like the resin, the wood, the berries, and whatever, But it's like, and the missions that you need to do are far simpler. So it's like, you know, have X amount of, have one of each type of location or character, So whether it's like the instant one or the ongoing or the end game, all that type of stuff. But it was really cool. So I'm always a bit dubious. You're talking about like My Little Scythe. I've never played that. But I'm always dubious about like, oh, I had these, I guess, stripped down or simplified versions of grander games. Do they still get the same feeling? Do you still get the same vibe of what you're doing? And 100% with My Little Everdell. I know that Adrian's talked about it before on the show. And yeah, I was talking to one of our listeners, Tom. He said, yeah, this is great. Like I played it. He played it with his daughter. Mm. And they said, yeah, you can really get like the, okay, I know I need this type of building or character to then marry into the end game scoring that I want to do. Mm. Or I want to have, if I'm able to activate the production again, I want to have that type of like a bonus for that or whatever. So that was really cool. So if you're interested in having like a simpler version of Everdell, like not the one that I have where I'm like, where I've got to sticker everything now. And it's like,
I need an hour just to decide which part of the game I'm going to play.
You need
But so with My Little Everdell, what age range would you put it with from a kid's perspective? And do you still enjoy it as an adult? Like, are we talking like, yeah?
Yeah, because you still have a few really good decisions you have to make.
Yeah.
But I also think that, so my niece, my youngest niece is 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you could play it from like 6 years old to probably 12 and still get a bit out of it.
Yeah, right.
Does the game do a job of kind of balancing the kind of skills required to be competitive in the game? Or do you feel like when you play the My Little Sides, the My Little Everdells, you still kind of have to play to the level of the child you're playing with?
Well, with My Little Everdell, everyone has the same access to the cards, right? So you can buy the cards you want from the market, from the field. I guess like, you know, I played with myself, my sister, and then my two nieces, and even my older niece, she'd played Everdell before, so she kind of knew the deal. And me and my sister had played heaps of Everdell together, so we kind of knew the deal and we knew what we were working for. So if I think about it that way, I think it's okay. Like you're just rewarding not the experienced, like an experienced gamer in general, but the experience of someone that's played a similar type of game, rather than, oh, I'm older, thus, and this, we know for two people on this podcast, it isn't true. Thus, I'm smarter. But that is, I don't think it doesn't penalize, you know, the younger players or whatever. You know, it's probably a bit more fair.
Yeah. Cool. I don't know if I'd say the same for My Little Scythe. It's similar to Scythe in that, you know, you've got to get, it's like, you know, Scythe, you collect the stars. We're collecting, not pies, what do they call them? Trophies. In a similar way, and you've got to achieve certain objectives to get a trophy. And yeah, I find that if you just focus on doing that, you can end the game pretty quickly. You get to your end limit with your trophies pretty quick.
Right.
So yeah. So if you play with people who, like for example, when I used to play with Layla, she would just try a little bit of this, a little bit of that, didn't really focus on, I'll get to the end game as quickly as possible. So if I wanted to win at all costs, I could just go bang, 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 4 trophies, I'm done. I win, you know. So there is a bit of that in it. I think, yeah, in My Little Scythe at least, yeah, you have to be, I wouldn't say you have to dumb down your game, but if you're the type of person that's like, I only enjoy games if I win because it's all about winning and win at all costs, then yeah, you're going to have a great time. It's easy to win and it will destroy the game for everybody else.
Just dunking in the key on a 6-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's like those people who, and no shame of them, but those people who like go like platinum hunting on like the PlayStation, like to get the trophies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's an easy platinum, whatever. It's like, well, that's an easy win playing My Little Scythe against, you know, yeah, exactly. 7 and 8 year old. It's an easy win. It's,
you want, like, to up those stats?
Yeah.
It's like Billy Madison playing dodgeball.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I do like kids' games, though, where I feel like I can genuinely try and I feel like it's a competitive head-to-head.
Mm.
The Magic Labyrinth was a great example of that for me. Mm. Have either of you played that?
No.
Heard of it?
Mm. Heard it. I've heard of Magic and I've heard of the Labyrinth, but not together.
It's nothing like that. It's essentially a memory game, and I don't love memory games, except I love Nana, but because I'm rubbish at them. I think Nana's fun because my memory's rubbish. And in the Magic Labyrinth, you set up this kind of maze with these wooden walls that stick into a template, and then you'll cover it. And basically what you need to do is you'll cover it with a plain board, and you have a piece that goes atop the board and then a magnetic ball that attaches underneath that same board. So the magnetic ball is going to be running through the maze, and your piece is going to be atop this invisible maze that you can't see. And it's essentially just a roll and move to go race and collect things.
Mm.
But as soon as your piece atop runs into a wall, that ball's going to drop because it'll move away and the, I guess, magnetic connection will break and it'll drop and roll back to the start. And so you'll go back to the start, reattach the ball and go again. And you're just trying to remember where the maze is to kind of navigate in space. It's really, really cool. But I played with my 6-year-old nephew, and I mean, this is probably a huge slag on myself, but he was so much better than me at it.
No, kids and memory games, man, I don't understand. Like 100%. I reckon it's once you hit like 12 years of age, you just lose whatever like magic you had as a memory game player. Because anytime I've played memory with a kid under the age of 10, they've obliterated me. Like 100% obliterated me. So I feel your sympathy there, Loz.
Yeah, but that game's sensational. If you got kids that are little, so good. Huge toy factor. Great.
Yeah, no, that's good. Well, we might stick with you, Lauren, and I'm very keen to hear about a game that yourself and Mitch, actually, I say Mitch played, but Mitch was, he was kind of the chief overseer. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the experience that you had in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, Mitch was lurking in the bushes in a game.
That's his normal everyday life, mind you.
Thank God she said in a game.
What's that? You know, Mo says, they don't call me, hey, you there in the bushes for nothing. So Mitch very graciously facilitated a game of Alice is Missing on Discord for myself and a few others from the barbecue. And I would say I'm a seasoned RPG player, a tabletop RPG player, but I'd never played anything quite like this. I'm sure everyone's heard about Alice is Missing. It's a one-shot role-playing game that is themed around a group of high school friends who have a friend named Alice who has gone missing. It's played entirely over text, though, and that's kind of the rub, is that you have individual chat groups with yourself and the other characters, and then one big group chat. And the game will drip feed you information and prompts that will kind of change the story or shape the story as you go, and kind of lead to some sort of climactic ending. What really makes this game, though, and I'm sure Mitch could speak to about this, is just the atmosphere. There's a soundtrack that comes with this game that you can, if you want to listen to, go on YouTube. It's great background music anyway, I think, but just really sets the tone for this game. It's a very serious game, but it's astonishing how moving or feeling a game that is really just over text can be. But this wasn't your first run of it, Mitch, was it? You'd played it before.
I played it once before, so I'd played it before with a few of the other podcasters, and it moved me in ways that games in general haven't before. Like it took gaming to another level emotionally for me, and I was astonished how sort of invested in the game and the characters and the story you could get in it. It plays in 90 minutes start to finish. You're done and dusted. There's no running over. It's 90 minutes. It's a fixed time frame. And yeah, the amount of investment, emotional investment that you can get in that game in that time frame, it just blew me away to the point where I was like thinking about it the day after, and you know, the story and what had happened and how it all went down and the different characters and how they sort of interacted. And so ever since then, I've been like, I've got to get this up and running. I've got to get this up and running. I've got to be able to, you know, get more people to see this game and to have a play of it. And, so that was why even getting all you guys together We'd had our hurdles just from a scheduling perspective, but we made it happen, and I'm glad you all had an awesome time because, yeah, it's I'm a bit of a seasoned RPG-er myself. I sort of cut my teeth on D&D and a whole bunch of other RPGs sort of growing up through high school and into my early adulthood, and this is so unique and different, but still, yeah, very, very intense and rewarding at the same time.
How does this compare to some of the other kind of RPG experiences you've had over the table?
It's totally different. I mean, especially if you use like D&D as the sort of foundation, when you say tabletop RPG to people, that's where they're going to go. All, you know, my experience with D&D, I don't know, people will play differently with D&D. Some people will focus heavily on the combat and the die rolls. Some people focus heavily on the role playing and the characters. And admittedly, the games that I've played in the past, you kind of fall somewhere in between. But this is even though in a D&D RPG, you're kind of building the story as you go along, and your characters are making the story and they're making the decisions about what's going to happen. It's not on the same level in terms of narrative building and creating the story as what Alice is Missing is. I don't think, anyway. I know someone during the week, I made a post about it on Facebook after we played, and someone was talking to me. We had a bit of a discussion about it. They were saying that it wasn't for them, and it wasn't, you know, they didn't enjoy it as much as other people because they felt like it was a bit on rails and they didn't really have any sort of control over the outcome of the story and how the story would terminate. And that's true. You know, the cards that you draw as you go through and play Alice is Missing, they will essentially determine the way I phrased it is like the framework, the bones of the story. But then from that point on, there is no limit to where you go with it. You know, you really have total control over everything that happens outside of that and building that story out, you know, on top of that framework. So it's interesting to see the different perspectives from folks around how they feel about the game, just to have two entirely sort of different experiences from that point.
It's interesting you say that, because I was having those thoughts at the beginning of our experience that if people were a bit kind of trepidatious or didn't know what to say or what to do, there might just be a lot of fluttering around of messages or, where's Alice? Oh, I don't know. You heard anything? Nah. Right? Yeah. I think the game on the surface seems like it's a great entry for people who are new to tabletop RPGs. And I do think that's true. But I think I need to caveat that with saying that you need to encourage people that they should be taking creative liberties. They shouldn't be relying or waiting on the game's framework to do that for them, because it doesn't really. And if you go into the experience assuming that's going to be the case, the experience may be a bit on rails or a bit lackluster. There was an experience, one incident, I won't say what it is because I'm not sure if it's a spoiler, but Adrian said something super outlandish in the middle of our game. I know, yeah. Shocking. Which just was completely unprompted and was not anything related to what the game fed him, but he just put it out there, added everyone in the Discord, told everyone, and it really kind of propelled the narrative, I feel, a little. And I think the game needs people to do that, but it doesn't explicitly tell you that that's what it really needs.
Is that not, I guess, in my, and I will limit, somewhat limited tabletop RPG, when I've enjoyed doing playing these games the most is when everyone in the group buys into or like really leans into their character.
Yeah.
So whether it's, and you know, and it's difficult. It became difficult for me, or started feeling difficult to me, because when you play a video game or a board game, it's like, no, this is the optimum way to do this. But part of playing a tabletop RPG is telling a story. And if every character is just doing the same thing or just trying to achieve the goal in the most straightforward way, it would feel on rails, I'd imagine. Like, especially it's like Alice is missing, so I'd imagine you're trying to find Alice. But at the same time, like if you're, and you know, without spending too much time on it, I'd imagine it's like it's your best friend A or best friend B or best friend C. what type of person are you? You know, are you brash? Are you reserved? And so on and so forth. Does that have an effect?
Well, it's entirely up to you, really. I mean, there's a very thin layer of sort of foundational sort of character built at the start, just to get you started. But everything else is up to you. And I found when I first played it, that was the hardest part for me, was going, I feel like I need more of a guide. Like, you can't just give me that and then say go. Like, where am I supposed to go? And then once you sort of give yourself a way to it and say, right, well, I am this character and I'm just going to start responding as that character and participate that way, then it just takes you away and off you go. But it's funny you should say that about Adrian, Lauren, because I did put at the start, like when I set this session up for all of us and I sort of hosted it, I didn't actually play. I did make a point to say, the game is, you're going to get the most out of this game if you take it seriously and commit to playing the character. And I said that primarily for Adrian, because I thought, you know, I know Adrian as well as anybody else does. And you know, I kind of thought, if he comes in here and doesn't take it seriously and, you know, tries to turn it into one of our Jackbox party nights, then it's not going to be fun for anybody, because the game will just not work in that instance. You really need a group of people who are going to commit to saying, right, let's do this, let's play the roles, I'm going to take it seriously and see where the narrative goes. And if you can do that, then you'll have an amazing time. I'm lost for words. It's hard to summarize how good the game is.
It's really outstanding. I think if you take the kind of two opposing ends of role playing, which I feel like D&D and Alice is missing, really are at opposing ends, where you kind of have more rule heavy, more kind of detailed, specific, mechanically kind of driven games, I would say D&D falls there, right? There are rules for how long it takes you to get places, for physics in the game, for how things work in the game. And then on the complete other end of the spectrum is the one where there's no rules, there's no mechanics. You just engage in the world however you want, but the storytelling is ramped up and you really need to be creative. So I think in Alice is Missing, the first 10-15 minutes might feel a bit weird or a bit clunky as you kind of get comfortable sitting with the character. But if you, I 100% agree with Mitch, buy into the experience and just let yourself be a teenager, which is a great setting because everyone knows what it feels like to be a teenager.
Yeah.
Then,
hey, Dan pulled it off. And if Dan can be a teenager, like anybody can.
You're Jesus. Just lucky you got that one in faster than I could sling one your way, because it was coming, buddy. It was coming. Yeah, that sounds really, really cool. It sounds like you had, like, it actually sounds like it's had a lasting effect on, you know, you as you played it before, Mitch, and then yourself, Lauren. Like the way that you guys were talking about it in our own Discord, in our little admin chat, like that really seemed like it resonated with you. And even I remember Dan was like, "Oh, I'm still thinking about the game yesterday and how it was." So we might touch back on that a little bit later in the show, because I think that's an important feeling to have. It's our first show back, the three of us, and I am going to take the new ball with the scissors, but I'm actually going to return to a game, one of my favorite games of all time, but with a new expansion, and that's Lost Ruins of Arnak, Expedition Leaders. Okay, so the Expedition Leaders. So this is not the most recent expansion to Lost Ruins of Arnak. It was one that came out, I think, in 2021, I believe. So 2021. And one of the reasons I really like Lost Ruins of Arnak is because I'm a massive fan of the Indiana Jones films, the adventure films, where they're archaeologists or searching for relics or whatnot. And I think this expansion actually makes that feeling a bit more true. It actually gives the game a little bit more theme. And I know people have said it's somewhat lacking in theme, which I don't necessarily agree with, but I guess I can see why you would say that. And the reason why is because what happens at the start of a game of Lost Ruins of Arnak is everyone starts with the exact same cards. And you start with the exact same powers, the exact same player board or whatnot. Whereas with the Expedition Leaders, what happens is you then get a role of an expedition leader. So there's six different expedition leaders that you can use. I think I'm going to get these right. So there's like the Mystic, like the Adventurer, there's like a Falconer or like a Ranger. There's like an archaeologist, there's a matron who loves to spend a bit of cash. So we made my mum play as the matron, funnily enough. And then there's almost like the researcher who works at the museum as well. And each one of these characters not only has certain powers on their board that are a bit different. So when you get those instances when you play the relics, so they've got their own unique power, but you can only play that one. You can only play that power by cancelling out the value 4. So for those of you who haven't played Lost Ruins of Arnak, one of the items that you can collect are these idols. And idols give you points, but what you're also able to do is you're able to activate certain instant powers by placing an idol on your board. This is great, super helpful for getting you out of a bind in a pinch, but you do miss out on some points that you would score innately at the end of the game. And so what you're able to then do is if you play this on a blue spot, you're able to use the blue power, which is unique and a bit more powerful for you. So it already has that. And then what they also have is their own unique set of starting cards, which then lets them lean into their powers. Now, some of these characters are a little bit easier to play than others, so I will say that. So for example, he's like the head researcher. He starts with an extra explorer that can go digging. So he's able to do that. He's able to do that three different spots as opposed to everyone else that has it two. Whereas the adventurer, they only have one. But what they're able to do, unlike everyone else, is they're able to move their one adventurer from a spot to another spot. So rather than placing it down, that's it. That's there for the end of the turn, unless you play a particular card. This person can put a snack token down, paying the cost on the snack token, and then they're able to move their adventurer off to somewhere else. And I do apologize. I'm probably going to get these names totally wrong, so I do apologize. The matron is really cool because what she's able to do is she has lots of money, effectively. So she's like a bursar. She's just spending cash to get as many of these cool relics that she can get. And what you're able to do with money is you're able to buy cards. Now, fast forward to the end of the game, and my mum actually won. And the reason why she was able to win, and don't get me wrong, I was just as surprised as everyone else was because, you know.
She was playing against you. I'm not surprised.
Hang on a second. What? If it was both of us playing, then yeah, she would have like a pretty good chance because it would be like, you know, whatever the odds are. I can't work it out right now. But what she was able to do is because she could buy so many cards, and cards are worth points at the end of the game. So this buying of cards actually became a viable strategy for her. And one of the other cards that she also had allowed her to, normally when you buy a tool, it goes to the bottom of your deck. So there's a pretty good chance that you're going to draw it next turn, unless you've really built out your deck and you haven't thinned it out from other cards. Well, with her card she was able to play, it was an instant. She was able to play it. I don't even know if it had a cost, but she could then take that card that she'd bought and add it straight into her hand. So she was then able to use that tool card, and I'm not talking about Mitch here, she was then able to use that tool card to then play in an action in a subsequent turn. So it was really cool to see that work because, you know, I've heard a bit of the complaints are, the deck building's a little bit, like, it's not that great. Oh, I don't really get that much out of it. You know, it's pretty much worker placement, a little bit of that. So I was like, well, no, this actually becomes a viable strategy. And my brother played as the artifact. So he's working for a museum and he was able to lean into getting the artifacts. So he had some artifacts. It was kind of cool. So he had a stack of artifacts, three artifacts that he had effectively hired out from the museum that only he could use. So he was like, oh, I've got these artifacts on loan from the museum. I can use their special powers. They then go into his deck once he's used them. And the cool thing about artifacts is they're a little bit more expensive because they cost you compass instead of gold. But what you're able to do then is you can activate their power straight away. So that became really, really powerful because he effectively had a really good power that only he had access to. And it was like three random ones that he could have. And he could even then at times replenish his artifact stack, and he got bonuses for doing that. So it was really, really, really cool. Look, the powers that they have, I could spend even more time going through this, but I'm conscious of talking too long because even I get sick of my voice sometimes. But what else this expansion adds is the other big criticism is that if you race up that research track, you are guaranteed to win. Now, in our game, that actually did not happen because Mum being the winner, she didn't race up the track. She was sort of focusing more on going out and exploring because that's what she liked to do, and then buying cards as well. But the cool thing about this one is it adds adds another track that you can put on. So is this the Monkey Cave? I can't remember again. I probably should have looked this up before I started talking. But if it's what you're able to do is there's bonuses at the top of the track that you can access in the base game only when you get to the top. So once you get to the tippy top, you move your magnifying glass all the way up to the top, and that's what most people do. They tend to push their magnifying glass up as quick as they can, and then the journal has a bit more powerful powers on that same track, but you sort of get diminishing returns as you go up because you kind of want those assistants and whatnot. So what you're able to do, though, is if you are to get to the second or third from the top, you can actually buy the bottom row or the second row from that stack rather than getting to the very top. Now, if you want to buy from the top row, which is incredibly expensive, you still need to get to the top, the tippy top. But at least then you can say, okay, look, I'm not going to be able to push to the top and then also get victory points. So instead, I'm going to push to second or third from the top, and I'm going to buy as many of those tiles as I can. And then I actually thought this is actually a really, really good compromise, because as you move on, it does get really, really expensive, and it allows you then to say, hey, I'm not going to push up and research. Instead, I'm just going to take, you know, the next most powerful one or the bottom most powerful one, and then I'm able to get some points in the end. So I think that actually addresses one of the key criticisms that I totally get, because in very few games that I played, did you not push to the top, get to the top first or second, and not end up either being first or second at the end of the game. So it was super, super powerful. Whereas this way, you know, Mum was able to, I'm specifically talking about Mum here, because she was able to win without getting to the very top. So Mitch, Lauren, have you guys played this expansion? Have you played the base game? Like, what are your thoughts about it? We've talked about it a few times on the show, so yeah.
I've only played the base game, and it sounds like the expansion pretty much resolves the criticism that I had with the base game, which was that that track was basically the whole game. You really needed to do that track. But if this is adjusted now and given you other options, then I think that's great. Is it? And would you say that you would always play with this expansion now?
I would never play without it. So between the leaders, and the thing is that it's really cool because you get a sheet that explains your powers. Even we played this before, so I played it with my family before, and I just had to quickly go through the rules again because it had been a little while, and then they're like, oh yeah, I get why this is a strong power. I get why this is a strong power. But you can always explain it yourself, right? You can always say, hey, this is why the Matron's power is really good. This is why this card's good, because in most cases, your card goes to the bottom of your deck. Nah, you get to have it and you get to play it. They do say that if you're going to use either of the new sides, so obviously it's a double-sided big tile that goes on the top of the track. If you're going to use either one of those two, you should be using the expedition leaders because they are a lot more powerful. They can generate many more resources than not using them. So you'd really struggle to move up that track if you weren't using them.
Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, I know. I'd be interested to try this out. I've also only played it on Board Game Arena, but my problem that I have with it, which is similar to the problem I have with Clank, is even though it's a deck building game, I didn't feel like I built a deck. I would play it and not really cycle through it. So I'd go to all this effort to buy a card and then maybe see it once.
Yeah.
I kind of tend to prefer deck building where I can see that card that I went to efforts to purchase again and again and again and really utilize it. So I think if that was tweaked for me, I'd be all over it.
I feel like, and please, listeners, prove me wrong. Whatever I'm having proven wrong happens way too much for me to care. But if I think there are more ways for you to thin out your deck and then cycle through it as well. So it's like, play this and then draw a card, or get this card, place it on top, and then you can draw it next turn or whatever. So I do think you actually end up seeing it more. One of the issues is that you only draw four cards on your turn. And it's that, it's kind of, the wording's a bit strange because you don't discard, you put it in your play area, and then at the end of the turn, unless you're going to exile a card, you put them all, shuffle them up and put it down the bottom of your deck. Whereas I think when it's that whole thing of, no, I'm going to discard it and then... But you're right, you don't have a massive deck of cards the same way, like, and I always go back to like Dominion, where it's, you know, you got 20 or 30 cards. Marvel Legendary, you got 20 or 30 cards, all that type of stuff. But for me, it's still deck building, but it's almost more like you're crafting your own specific actions for what you need. Knowing that in all likelihood, you're probably going to see that card next turn. I find that sometimes a bit overstated about, oh, you'd never get to see the card that often. I actually feel like I tend to see cards a lot, but I also like to thin out, get rid of the fear, get rid of some of the crummier cards that I'm not going to use again, you know, because it's like one boat or one Jeep when I can put another card in that gets me a power and then also has two Jeep or two boats. So, but anyway, far be it from me, Lauren, to tell you how to play games. We both know how that's going to end up.
I appreciate that you think I'm good enough at the game to know how to thin up my deck and optimize it. But maybe I just need to play it in person as well, because it's beautiful production and you probably lose something playing it on PGA.
It's so good. And our good friend Harry, actually the day I was playing it, he bought like acrylic compass and acrylic coins for it. And I was like, oh man, my cardboard ones look so weird, so crummy, which is kind of weird because in the base game you get these really cool rubies, which looks like Sovereign Hill raspberry drops. So if you've ever been to Sovereign Hill, Sovereign raspberry drops, you get the arrowheads, which are badass, and then you get the little
cardboard compasses.
Well, yeah, but it's just like, anyway, that look, I love Lost Ruins of Arnak, warts and all. I think it's a blast to play all the time, and I just love playing around, and even if my strategy isn't optimum, it doesn't bother me too much. But I would like to hear about Mitch's sizzle next, if that's okay with you, Mitch.
Yeah, I could do that, as soon as you asked nicely. So there's a little bit of a story to my sizzle tonight, because last time I was on the show, I alluded to the fact that I was going to do two sizzles on the last episode I was on. And that didn't end up happening because Dan and Dana blabbered on for hours and we ran out of time. So my sizzle tonight is going to be the game that I was going to sizzle back then. I kept everybody waiting this long, and it is Siege of Valeria. Now, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of any of this Valeria universe games, but there's quite a few of them out there. Some of them are great. Some of them are not so great. Some of them are okay. But I jumped in on the Kickstarter. There were three games in the Kickstarter that they ran. There was the Siege of Valeria, Thrones of Valeria, and I think it was called Dice of Valeria was the roll and write one. Now, the Thrones of Valeria is a trick-taking game, which is very fun. I'm big into trick-takers. And the Dice of Valeria, I think it was called, is obviously a roll and write type game, which I didn't really love, to be honest. And so I moved that one on out of the collection. So of the three, I only have the Thrones and the Siege of Valeria left. And the Siege of Valeria is a solo-only game, in my opinion, by far the best of the three when they released them. And I don't know why it's sort of flown under the radar for as long as it has, because it's so much fun and it's so enjoyable. It's kind of classic tower defense. So you set up what they call a vanguard, which is a row of five cards or wall of your castle that you have at the bottom of your play area, and then you have five rows of enemy cards that are lined up coming down into you. You roll a whole bunch of dice. There's blue dice, there's red dice, and you then allocate your dice to attack the enemies that are coming in. The objective of the game is to defeat the siege engines. So at the top of each of the rows that are flowing down attacking you, there's siege weapons, and you need to defeat all of those in the deck of siege weapons in order to win the game. Throw into that mix, when you defeat the cards and the enemies that are coming down to attack you, they each have a little power on them. And so when you defeat a creature, you get to keep it in your hand that you can then play later to use it as a little power. And they might be effects that mitigate your dice rolls. They might let you add more dice to your attack queue. They might let you do double damage to enemies that you're attacking that are adjacent to the enemy, those sorts of things. There's a whole bunch of different things that these powers on the bad guys will have. And you can also then upgrade on your wall to have heroes for each position along your wall to defend the wall that also give you additional little powers as well. It's super snappy. It's super easy. I don't really know. There's not that much to say about it, really. I mean, it's not complex. But it's a game that you can just put out on the table. It's literally a deck of cards that you play out in a certain rows. But it's so much fun. So I wanted to talk about it. I've been playing it for a while now, and every time I play it, I think, why haven't I talked about this game on the show yet? It's so good. And why aren't people talking about it? Why aren't other people, you know, checking it out and it becoming something, you know, more popular in the solo gaming scene? Because it's just a good little game.
Do you think it, like you said, it got lost in the fact that there were two other games released alongside of it with the Kickstarter, and maybe people didn't play it? Whereas if it was released as its own product, it's like, hey, I know this is great for me. It's a solo game. I like playing solo games. It's tower defense. That kind of lends itself to being solo because it's automated. Things run down. You don't need another player. You kind of, you know, it's a quite a good way to run it. So do you reckon that's maybe had an effect?
That could be it. And maybe because like Thrones of Valyria, you can't play solo. So I think maybe the solo gamers were kind of like, oh, I'm not going to get the pack because, you know, I don't want that third game because I can't play it solo. Maybe I don't really know. Or maybe, as you say, it just got lost in that mix up that people were like, oh, yeah, three games, they mustn't be that good if they're packaging three games together. But it's not a big, you know, AAA release that's going to stand on, you know, up against an On Mars or a Voidfall or anything like that. Like, they're not even in the same ballpark. You're not even comparing these two games. I think I have it on my shelf here. I could even pop it down. You know, it's in a small box. There's not a lot going on. But
I can confirm that is a small box.
Yeah, it is a small box. But the fact that it is in a small box and it is so simple is part of the draw for me. You know, that I can port this really good game around. You know, I can take it to work and play on my lunch break. I could take it camping with me. I could take it. You could take it anywhere. You'd probably struggle playing it on an airline tray table because it's probably they lie. You're chasing cards all over the plane. But yeah, I mean, holiday wise, easily. I mean, and you know, as far as taking the box away and putting the components into a Ziploc bag and carrying it, like you could carry it in your handbag. It's just a really fun little card game.
I do find that, like I said, with the tower defense, that does lend itself really well to the tower defense. I guess not theme so much, but like the mechanics, it does lend itself well to solo gaming because it runs itself. And I know you've talked at length about having there's a difference between, I guess, having like a good Ortimer and a simple Ortimer. It's like, well, it's tower defense, right? Like, I'd imagine they move down. They might have an action or an effect if they get within a certain place. You need to work out how you got to get rid of them.
Did you design this game? That's like literally 101. That's how they work.
I'm waiting for my royalty check.
The cards move down and they all have, well, they don't all have, the siege engines that you're trying to attack have certain effects that will trigger based on which row they're in and how close they get to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's like Underfalling Skies is similar, right? Like, you know, they move down. It's, you know, if it's depending on the type of ship that gets there or whatever, like, you know, you can defeat them before they move down based on where you place things. So, yeah, this sounds really cool. I could have sworn that I did back it But I reckon I must have been like, I'll back it. And then it's like, it's within a couple of days. And I was like, I'm not backing it. Like, I was probably a little more frugal than I am at the moment. So in saying that, I'm still a bit of a tightwad. It did look cool. And the art by the Micho, like it's that... You know, you could be forgiven looking at that. It's like, is this an expansion for Paladins of the West Kingdom? Like, is that that's...
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that, because I was just thinking, I wonder if part of the getting lost in the mix is because it's in Valeria.
There
are so many Valeria games. And, you know, I know why designers and publishers will do that. They say, you know, we're going to create a world and we're going to create the lore around the world. And then we'll release multiple games that all exist in that world that we've created. And that's great. And, you know, more power to you, but is a negative of that then some games are like, ah, it's another Valeria game.
Sure. Yeah. That's where you're coming from.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's a factor as well.
It's like another MCU series or film, like something else I've got to catch up on, or if I miss. So I've got Valeria fatigue. That does sound cool. I'd definitely be keen to give it. I'd say play it with you, but we can't play it together. But I'm definitely keen to pinch it off here and have a game,
have a go,
or whatnot, if I can't get my hands on it.
I was just going to say, I'm sure you could pick a copy up somewhere relatively cheap. I mean, it's a small box game. This would be in the 30 to 40 buck range, I reckon, in most game stores if they've got it in stock. But yeah, if you're a solo gamer and you want something light and easy and really enjoyable to play, check it out, Siege of Valeria. It's flying under the radar and it should get more attention.
It certainly should. Like I said, that art by the Micho is hot fire. Lauren, you have been tilling the fields? Did you till the fields? I don't know. So you've been sowing or something with your sizzle for this week.
I just wanted to talk really quick about a little Japanese game that I got recently in an impulse purchase. It is a game called Harvest. Now, when you try to look this up on Board Game Geek, I think a very old, very dry-looking Euro comes up, but it's the one that has a cute little tomato on the box. I'm not sure if you can find that one. All I'll say about this game, can you find it?
I'm not entirely sure. I'm having a look now, but tomato in the box.
Nah, no tomatoes for me. Does this game actually exist? I think Lawrence has made up her own game.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's cool.
It's just a brand new game, hot off the press. No, it's honestly so mean and it's so funny. It's essentially all you do in this game. You've got a little board, which is just your little field. And everyone's got their boards as well, and they're kind of mushed together. If you play with four players, say like in a grid of everyone's 3x3 boards. And all you do is take a tile and put it on a board. If you've got one tile on your board already, you can put it anywhere on someone else's board. And the different vegetables, there's carrots, there's tomatoes, different vegetables. And don't come at me saying, well, tomatoes are fruit. Don't care.
don't worry.
And they're going to be worth negative points or positive points. And as soon as there's three in a row, diagonal, horizontal, vertical, wherever they are, if one of those was on your field, you're going to pick it up and you're going to take those points, positive or negative. So the whole game is just screwing people over, getting three in a row on their board, and then them flipping it back and doing it on your board. There's table talk, there's bartering. It's like, hey, well, you don't put this tomato on my board and I will not put that on your board, or I'll put my next positive on your board, and then immediately reneging on that. It's outstanding. There are a few little wrinkles. So most of the cards are like plus 10, plus 20, minus 10, minus 20, but there's a few minus 50s there.
Oof.
There's also things like different tornadoes that let you just clear stuff without anyone picking up the points. So if someone's lining up a perfect slew of positive points, you just tornado that stuff right out of there. It's delightful. It's really great. So simple. Plays in, I reckon, 15 minutes. Teaches in about 2. I think you can get it on Amazon Japan.
I think I found it on BGG. It took me. Did you? Oh, I think so. It's kind of like pastel colors.
Yeah, cartoony.
Yeah, cartoony, and there's a couple of different sort of vegetables and fruits, but the tomato sort of front and center.
Yeah, that's the one. It's a tiny little box.
What year do you reckon it was released, Lauren?
Ooh. I feel like it's either going to be really recent or really old, and nowhere in the middle based on your question. I don't know. Maybe like 2021? Recent?
The other way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it like 2000?
1992.
Wow.
How have you found this? I'm still looking. I can't.
I'll put the link into the chat here, and let's see if you guys can confirm or deny if that's the one.
Let's fact check Mitch.
Yeah, see if
I can confirm. He is correct. He is correct.
Oh man, that's a cute little tomato. I'd be buying this game.
Yeah, it's apparently aged very well.
Indeed.
In the past 3 decades.
Better than Dan.
Ah.
Yeah. So. There's not much to say about it because it's dead simple. But if you want something that's really fun and really flippin' mean and creates a lot of banter, then I definitely recommend giving this a try.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. Just looking at the pictures now too, it looks pretty cool.
I know, it's so cool. They've missed out on a marketing ploy here. You could have been selling these cute tomatoes like how Leader Games sells the root characters. They just have, you can buy the tomatoes. Come on, there's plushies.
Yeah, plushy tomatoes.
Yeah, no, it's really outstanding. I've not played it 3-player, which has the kind of boards in a triangle.
Yes, I did. They've got a picture of that up there, actually. That looks tough.
Mm. And I tried the solo version, and it's absolute garbage. So only get this if you are going to play it with other people, because that's what this game
needs. Scratch that off my list then. Go on.
Yeah, that's Harvest.
I'm surprised how many games there are on BGG that are called Harvest, I got to say.
I saw one that was like, this looks cool because it was like fantasy. Like, that was the first one that came up. It was like from 2017 and it was like your fantasy characters. So it was like goblins and fairies and elves that were harvesting stuff. So that's actually what I thought you were talking about, Lauren. I was like, this is cool. And then like, nope.
You're like, where are the tomatoes?
Yeah, I was like, tomatoes. And it's definitely isn't Japanese. Like, I was like, very much not Japanese. So, it's cool. Look at you. You know, you imagine if we didn't have Lauren on the show, there's no way we would have found about these cute tomatoes, Mitch. So I, for one, am grateful that Lauren is on the show.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So that is very different games / expansions there. So we had Lost Ruins of Arnak, The Expedition, Leaders, Siege of Valeria, and Harvest that was released in 1992.
Correct.
So on to our next segment, and that is the news.
If you're looking to add to your board game collection without taking out a second mortgage, then look no further than Advent Games. Dean and the team don't just sell games, they play games, they know games, they love games, just like us. And the first thing you notice when you head to adventgames.com.au is the amazing range of games. Dean and the team have worked tirelessly to make sure that every game is properly catalogued into the website. You can search by card games, dice games, family games, gateway games, solo games, and games from your favourite designers. And they don't just have games. Advent has a huge range of RPG books, game inserts, organisers, sleeves, even miniatures and scenery to make your next game night an experience to remember. Shipping is a flat $10 if you live in the Sydney metro area, $15 for the rest of Australia. And don't forget, if you sign up for their newsletter, every Friday you receive an email with the latest specials, newest arrivals, and a list of all the games that have just come back into stock. So there's no excuse for missing out on that game that you desperately want in your collection. So why not grab your next sizzling game from Advent Games? Head to adventgames.com.au now.
So just a couple of quick news tidbits and announcements. Quickly coming upon us in the next couple of months is the Brisbane Game Day. So that's our autumn game day in March, so March 23rd. Now we are changing locations to the Royal on the Park. So the Royal on the Park. So please be aware of that we are changing locations. We have also got PlayCon coming up soon, so we're all very excited. There's A few of us have been working extra hard on PlayCon. We've talked about it so much already on the show, but we're super excited. We're hopefully all going to be able to be there. Guests, you know, game tables.
Speaking of us all going to be there, I heard a rumor, Connor, and you're on the hot seat here. I'm going to put you on it because I like to do that. I like to go off script and just crazy.
A bit spicy. Yeah, right.
I know that there's a bit of a pilgrimage happening for the Brisbane game day in March, and there's a number of people that are going to be travelling up to Brisbane for the March 23rd game day. And I think you're the last member of the podcast to confirm or deny whether you'll be in attendance.
The Sasquatch may indeed be leaving the Southwest Forest and venturing up north. So yes, I amongst many other people, will be there to enjoy the game day. It'd be nice. I was talking to Adrian about it the other day. There's kind of a little bit of it's a link because our first ever game day that yourself and I attended was in Brisbane around the same time. So that's really cool. So there'll be, you know, I'm getting like 3 years of us of doing these game days. It's going to be really good. Speaking of game days, we also have the Melbourne game day on the 9th of March. So that's going to be in the same month. So hopefully we'll be able to see you at both those game days. But yes, it's going to be a busy couple of months leading up to PlayCon. And Lauren, you just wanted to mention something quickly that is close to your heart.
Yes, it's a combination of a few of my passions, but Solo But Not Alone 4 is currently running. It's a fundraiser that runs every year at the beginning of the year. So if you just Google Solo But Not Alone 4, for $10, you get a bundle of over 100 solo tabletop RPGs, and all proceeds go to different non-for-profits that support mental health. There's Fox Curio's Floating Bookshop is one of them this year, and that alone, I think, is worth the money, but a lot of them are just really weird, super indie, super experimental RPGs that people donate. I found some super weird gems through this each year. One that I found was called This Person Should Not Exist, which is a solo kind of artifact building game where you deface a Where's Wally book.
Okay.
And the theme is there's basically a cult conspiracy of this man called the man who shouldn't exist or the man who does not exist. And it's kind of like the Pepe Silvia from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You're just circling the Wally and drawing lines. So yeah, really weird, bizarre experimental ones, but Solo But Not Alone 4, check it out. Great cause and great value.
Yes.
I've just Googled it. I will be purchasing that after the show.
And I know that if you are able to go back and listen to Lauren and Def's top 50 games of all time leading up to our top 10s, there's a few really cool solo RPG, tabletop RPGs that you might want to get your hands on as well. So doing the good work there, Lauren. But next up, we'll talk about the question of the pod and go through some of the answers. So, last episode's question of the podcast, was, do you record board game plays? So, do you record board game plays? Now, we didn't say stats, because I guess, but plays, I think, is something a bit more broad. Now, you can include stats if you want. Mitch, would you like to go through the first half of our responses?
I can do that. No problems at all.
Oh, thank you, man.
Just for you. So first up, we've got Shane RC, who says he just downloaded Aftergame yesterday, which is a fantastic app that we're all trying to use at the moment. We're all starting to use. I've even started logging games. Can you believe it, Connor? It's mental.
Sorry, that's just me picking myself up off the ground.
This is going to sound like a cheesy plug, right? But Aftergame does make it so much easier to log games, because everybody's linked and all your friends get the games at the same time. Anyway, moving on. I've been distracted. Sorry, Shane RC. I've totally disrespected your answer. But we're moving on. Shane RC says, just downloaded Aftergame yesterday in an attempt to start logging some stats. Seems easy enough. It will be mainly to see how long it's been between games. He says, if you're in Brisbane, share your username with him and he'll be keen to organize social functions within the app, which is what you can do. It's one of the things you can do within the After Game app. So that's a good function of that one. Okay, so next up we have James Fleming, who says, yes, just to see what I've played. I don't log scores or winners, though. Sometimes I add some details about the game and the play. So I thought that was an interesting one because a lot of, I think it's good to see people that keen to know what they've played as opposed to, you know, tracking winning and being all about scores. So that was a good one. Kerry Restante says, I originally kept stats because I was always forgetting what I had played, but after a while I found it addictive. It's interesting seeing how many games I actually played in a month, how much a game is worth per play now, how much a game actually takes my group to play, or which roles I have played before. It also just great for memory recall. When I see that I last played a game with a friend or good mate, I suddenly remember the fun we had playing it and certain things that happened in the game or just in conversation. So that was another interesting take on it. That, you know, it's not just about stats. It's about remembering those memories and having those moments and stuff as well, and they can be a good trigger for that. So that's kind of cool. And then on the other side of the coin, we've got Kim Breback, who said, nah, I'd much rather talk about the fun I had in a game. I don't forget games I enjoy or did not, and I don't give a rat's tail how much I win or lose. Although I do recall it took me about 15 plays of Quacks to get a win, but I didn't need track stats with that. I felt it deep inside.
And if you go up to Kim at a game day and meet Quacks, he breaks out in a sweat. So make sure you do that. Lauren, can you run us through the second half of our answers, please?
I absolutely can. Some random bloke named Connor popped in and said, nope, I know how terrible I am. I don't need a forever reminder.
What a loser.
Yeah, who's that guy? Ben Turner says, I do, to reflect on how I've engaged with my collection. It helps me remember some fun past games and events, help me identify stuff that really should get sold, and I find the stats produced very interesting. That's good as well to kind of curate your collection. Yep. Oh, I haven't played this in 2 years, better go.
Yeah, that was quite a common response, and I think 100%. A really good one too. Using it to be like, when's the last time I played this? And do it, am I missing it? Probably not. Whereas like if you don't actually have a firm date and time, and you're like, oh, I played this the other day. We all know the other day means like 6 months ago. So like,
Yeah, it's always longer than you thought it was when you check. Hell says, why do I record? I just love the data entry and stats. Sounds like death. I love seeing the cost per hour played of a game drop the more I play it. I love seeing variations in my scores, and I keep photos so when I play the game next, I can see how I set the game up comfortably for solo play. Oh. When I add a game to BG stats, I add purchase price and date of purchase. Wow, that's
cool.
Great commitment. That's really cool. Stats.
That's something I didn't even know you could do. I think that's really interesting that you can add the price of the game.
It might be a bit depressing for me, though.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
My Kickstarter that cost me $320 and I've played it 5 times.
Anyway. And Velda Shane says, I'm trying to get better with keeping stats. Mostly, I just steal Draven's data.
The almanac, the keeper of the secrets, Draven. Yes, so keep stealing those secrets. Yeah,
look, I personally don't think there's anything wrong with stealing Draven's data.
Are you Aussie broadband?
I think more people should do it.
Hello, it's me. Yeah.
I mean that because he keeps all the stats of our show, so we should, we should get right
behind. We're always so thankful to Draven for keeping those stats. It's really good for us to reflect back on them too. But new question of the pod. You both talked about having a bit of an experience and it's sticking with you with Alice is missing. So I thought, / Mitch thought, that a good question would be for people to describe a game experience that has affected you emotionally. So it affected you emotionally. Now, I think if you've gone and played like point salad and you've become hungry, all the power to you. But you know, what else are you like? What are we looking for here, Mitch? What type? What are you hoping to get out of this question?
So I was hoping to get some stories from people who had interacted with a game or played a game. It doesn't have to be narrative. It could be anything that they've had where they've actually walked away going, wow, I didn't expect to be affected on that level when playing a board game. You know, you play Trouble, you use the Pop-O-Matic bubble. It doesn't go very deep. Hey, you know, it's very surface level emotionally. Right. But I want to hear from the community about stories that they've had where they've gone into a game not expecting to necessarily have an emotional experience, but they've walked away going, wow, that was quite impressive. I'll touch on one more because I played it on the weekend.
I was about to say
Jules and Murray. Freedom the Underground Railroad. It's not the first time I've spoken about it on the show, and it's one of my top 10 games. But that's the sort of thing I'm talking about. You know, things where you play the game and yeah, it's a game, but we walk away from it going, there was more in it. And that game took me to an emotional level where I never expected to get playing board games. So that's what I'm looking to hear from.
I mean, look, when I think about it, I know you said you were talking about it doesn't have to be a narrative game, but a lot of the time it is to do with narrative games and probably like almost like a stress response. Knowing full well, this doesn't, in the scheme of my life, it does not matter whether I roll a 1 or a 20. But that experience of, and I talked about this a couple of times, like with KDM, when it's like, oh man, all hope is lost if you don't get a hit. And you roll that lantern, and the lantern's the 20 or the 10, and it's like, oh my God, we did it. We slayed the beast, or we broke its jaw off, or something like that. And it's like a guttural roar, like a primal response from within me as I stare at my screen because I'm not even playing in person. I'm playing TTS. So that's kind of what that's when I think about that. That's what I'm running off. So I'm interested to see what other people would say. Lauren, have you got anything that springs to mind?
I mean, I first kind of thought of those plays, like you said, Connor, where it's that I need that one card, I need that one dice roll, and then there's just like uproarious cheers from the table when it's achieved. I think we had one play of Gloomhaven where someone needed to draw one specific card from their attack modifier deck of a huge little stack, and they drew that one card and it clinched this really important scenario. And so things like that, definitely.
Yeah, that's cool.
But for the most part, I tend to think about, you know, really social games, so social deduction games that have been impactful, some of the solo journaling RPGs that I've fiddled with that kind of deal with themes of mental health that are always kind of really emotional.
Yeah, yeah.
Just on that social deduction, and I'm happy for people to put their own spin on this, however they, you know, because you know, I'm not the
This is news to me. What? It's not what you told me pre-production.
So if people want to put their own spin on it, by all means. But just when you brought up social deduction then, Lauren, it could even be a matter of I've had social deduction games where, you know, people think I'm the werewolf and everyone is attacking me and I'm not the werewolf. And, you know, and it can get quite stressful and emotional when you're trying to go, I'm not the werewolf, I swear to God. You know, you're trying to dig yourself out of the hole or whatever. And, you know, that could be emotional for some people. And different people are going to respond to different things in different ways. So, look, I'm just interested in hearing the board
spectrum. Should make some interesting responses. But, as always, it's not up to us. As Mitch said, it's up to you guys in the community to describe to us a board game experience that has affected you emotionally. Now, it would be remiss of me not to mention one of our fantastic sponsors, and that is our Patreons. So just a quick shout out to a few of our Patreons. And these guys are massive supporters of the show and have been for a very long time. So thank you to Haig McCliskey, Heath Washburn, Helix Rhodes, and Ian O'Toole. So thank you guys so much for your support, for all the patrons as well. I know, Mitch, we had a blast recording some of those Christmas episodes, and the same thing with you, Lauren, with our basketball and sport episodes. So they were heaps of fun. So if you would like to have access to them, and we are starting to put out teasers of our Patreon episodes up onto our Facebook pages. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to patreon.com/boardgamebarbecue, sign up to donate and get access to exclusive podcast episodes that we record just for our patrons, as well as some exclusive Patreon events like the ones we are running at PlayCon. So the Patreon pre-party, that's it, as we're calling it now. Bad luck, I've gone and said it. So there's always those events that we, and as well, we've got the Jackbox Party Pack and the pub trivia as well that happen over Discord, as well as other events we'll be running through the year.
And I'm just going to throw it in, just again, I'm going off script here. There will be.
Yep, there we go.
Alice's heard it missing from sessions.
The man who took Alice Patreon, himself, Mitch. But please remember, if you are not in the position to support us through donations, there is plenty of other ways that you can support us. You can go to Apple Podcasts and leave a star rating and a review for us, or use Spotify's star rating system. It only takes a few seconds of your time, but means the world to us. And don't forget, if you leave a review, Dan's oath is to read them out. I still remember my friend John writing, saying that Dan is going to have to play Arkham Horror, the living card game, again. So he wrote it as Dan's oath, and then Dan read it out. It was fantastic. You can also get involved in the Board Game Barbie community by joining our Facebook community, following us on Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube. And of course, there's a Discord community, which we love and adore. There's always games and conversations going on. We've got a whole gamut of different tabs and threads that we have going on. It gets a bit mad sometimes, but get involved and support the show. All links are in the show notes. Now, lady and gentlemen, how did you go with your oaths? People want to know, starting with you, Lauren, because I want to know how Artisans of Splendid Vale went.
So I'm going to call this oath half done, because we got through like three quarters of the first scenario and then had to.
That sounds like.
Oh, it's absolutely an excuse. And I'll be
that
writing
that. Sounds like an excuse both you and me have made multiple times in the show, Mitch. So if, and Lord knows we live in glass houses. So
knowing what's coming up,
I'm going to shut my mouth. Three quarters of the first scenario. So I read the rule, set it up, definitely gave it a good crack. It has delightful production, Connor. I think the best bit of it is just some of the things they do with the components, which I've not seen before.
Cool.
So you have these little character booklets that you sticker with gear like you would a video game. So you equip them with gear, but you put the helmet on their head and you put the breastplate on, and all the different characters have different kind of asymmetric puzzles and things that you can add to their books. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the passports in Pandemic Legacy.
Sure. Yep,
so it's got that vibe, but with a bit more of a kind of video game feel. So that was really neat. I definitely need to give it more time to see how the story and combat and stuff shakes out. So let's call that a half-baked yes for the oath.
It needs to go back in the air fryer for a bit longer. Is that what you're saying, Lauren?
To go back in the air fryer. I thought medium rare was optimal. Just call it raw. That's or it. Well done.
Yeah.
It's blue. And then my new oath is to chip away at my perhaps overly ambitious 10x10 challenge that I, like many, have set up for the beginning of the year. So I'm going to say that I just want to get 3 plays ticked off that 10x10 challenge. I think that's reasonable. They're all solo for the most part, so that should be okay, because I seem to always set these challenges and then one or two games fall off the wayside. So hoping to kind of get a good start in early with that. So that's my new
one. I like it. Sounds achievable, which apparently Mitch's,
a change of
Mitch's
pace,
was
apparently.
Not.
Well, yeah, I like to keep you guessing. I like to keep you on your toes. I like to keep things interesting. I think this is a board game barbecue first. I'm breaking new ground here. My oath was to play 20 strong, the Too Many Bones version. And I did it, but I can't remember it.
What?
No, I swear I did it.
If only there was a way for you to make sure that you knew every game you'd played. If only there was a way.
I actually did it. Like, I did it because I haven't been on for like months because we had the break over Christmas and whatever. And I played it like the next day after we recorded that last episode I was on. And I know I played it because I packed it up and I've put it on my shelf and moved on to the next thing. But I can't remember it enough to talk about it to say exactly how it was or how it played or anything like that. So I don't know if that's going to count or not. I know I did it, but I don't know if I did it enough to really be able to say I've done it. So I'm happy to write it down as a loss if you want in the loss column.
No, it's okay. I'm feeling generous at the beginning of the year. My stress levels are low. I'm happy.
I'll I love Too Many Bones enough that I'll probably come back to it at some point and talk about it later. It's obviously the same system as 20 Strong. I just don't remember enough about the nuance to be able to talk with any sort of validity on how it is in terms of the Too Many Bones side of things. So that's that one. Now my next oath is going to be to play a new game that is supposedly arriving as early as tomorrow. And it's a new game to me because I was on the second wave of the shipping, but it's actually been out for about a year already and a lot of people have probably already played it, and that's ISS Vanguard. So I'm going to give that a go when it arrives. I don't know if anyone's going to be too... It's a funny one, isn't it, with the second wave shipping, because the hype's gone. You know, everyone who paid the money to do the two-way shipping or whatever and get the game as soon as it was available have done that, dusted. People have made their videos. The reviewers have talked about it. Everyone's finished the game playing it through all the way. And then 2 years later, the rest of us who couldn't afford multiple-way shipping are like, woo!
The rest of us tight ones.
Woo, I've got my Harvest game from 1992. It was awesome. So I will definitely give that a go. I'm actually super keen to have a go because so many other people have already and I'm still waiting. But it should be here, as I said, either this week sometime. It said, I think it's supposed to be tomorrow, but you never know with the post office. So when it arrives, I swear to play ISS Vanguard.
So I actually have a copy of that coming too. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that it's actually a good friend Sarah's copy. And she's gone Radio Dark. So I don't know. She might have been like, no, actually, I changed my mind. I'm going to keep it now. No, but I'm sure that it's coming and she'll let me know that it's on its way soon. Hopefully, I'm excited too.
Is it coming directly to your house though? Or is it going to her first? And then...
Yes. Well, as far as I know, otherwise I guess I'll have to come to Sydney to come get it. I guess. So when I saw that as your oath, I was like, do I do that? No, I've got a little bit of a different one. So I guess that leaves me. And so I had two. So my first one was to play Dwarf Romantic with my family. And we did. We played that, which was really cool. It is a campaign / ongoing type game. So we had a couple of games and then we just wanted to play others over Christmas time. So I think I'll just say, we've done that. Maybe we'll come back to it, or maybe I'll just restart it, or whatever. Lauren, you were on the show when I mentioned this was my next oath, because I remember you made a funny face at me when I mentioned it. Now, the thing is that I thought it was coming. I thought it was coming. And there was a package that was delivering the same time it was supposed to get here. The only thing is, it wasn't a board game. It was a pack of soaps.
So, I was just about to say, was it a bunch of towels that you?
It was a pack of soaps that I ordered. So it's like I was like, oh sweet, it's coming, because it was like Dispatch or whatever, and I don't know if Earthborn Rangers was through Aetherworks, whatever. And so I was like, oh, and then I was like, that's not Earthborn Rangers. So I still don't have it.
You smell good.
I smell I'm very fragrant. In typical me fashion, I somehow the shipping didn't get deducted when it should have been deducted or whatever. So I don't know where my copy is. Anyway, so I'm happy to put that down as like, I'll get to it when it gets here. Let's face it. So, but Lauren, what was your happy man?
I know. I'm just so keen to hear about this game. It's been on my radar for the longest time.
As a fellow Arkhamite, although I think I've dropped down in the rankings after my spoilers. But I know you would be very keen on that. So, but my next oath, unless Earthborn Rangers miraculously appears on my doorstep with eyes as Vanguard, is to play a game I've played before, but my family has not, and I reckon they're going to love it, and that is Revive. So I was very lucky to get a copy of Revive for Christmas, and I'm catching up with my family next weekend, so I hope I can get a game of Revive in with them, and then talk about it on the next show, even though it's been talked about before. So, hey, that's pretty good. I would say, you know, let's call that a solid 2 out of 3.
Mm-hmm. B+.
B+. Hey.
I'll take it.
Well, I think for Lauren, that's like unders, but for me and Mitch, it's definitely overs, so it's not too bad. Hey, guys, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed catching up with you guys after the new year and Christmas time, and it's been great hearing what you've played. Looking forward to seeing you guys in the flesh soon. I do get a bit jealous of you Sydney Siders hanging out and having all that fun.
We do have Jules though too.
Yeah, well, it can't all be rosy and
good. Take the good with the bad.
It's true. But thank you, guys. And thank you, listeners, for hanging out with us for the last little bit. Like we always say, we could not have this show without you guys. So once again, thank you to our patrons. Thank you to Advent Games. And we'll see you all again next time. See ya.
See you later.
See ya.